face out. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 138. And now for some socks. Monday, October 3rd, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Each week, you can see photographs and a blog post related to all the things I talk about on the episode on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: Yarn Lover at Large, Ever Expanding Skill Set, On the Porch, and Off the Shelf. Hello, everyone, and welcome. Thank you so much to those of you who have made a purchase of the letterpress cowl pattern on Ravelry. My last episode, episode 137, was all about this new cowl pattern knit with a beautiful hankette set in the colorway Letterpress, a series of six gorgeous hankettes or small skeins, dyed by Megan Lacey of Distelfink Fiber Company. If you're interested in more information about how to buy a hankette set or just more information about the pattern, you can check out the thread on Ravelry. The pattern is also listed on Ravelry, and I have an extended blog post on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. There's an emphasis on slow fashion in October. My Instagram feed has been filled with introductions of Instagram friends who are making a point about their own journey of making, their plans for a handmade wardrobe, their philosophy about the things that they're making. And this past weekend has given me an opportunity to think about that quite a bit, because I participated in the 200th anniversary of my mom's parish in Hunterdon County, New Jersey. Her church turned 200 years old. My mom is very active in the church, and she enlisted me and Samuel and Bovine Social Club to come help celebrate their church's history with them. This involved wearing period dress that has been made almost exclusively by the hands of my mother and my late father. Between the two of them, their abilities include machine sewing, hand sewing, leatherwork, gunsmithing, embroidery, beading, quill work. I'm trying to think what else. Felting. You name it, they engaged in those crafts to bring period clothing to life. And we used to participate in living history events as a family. So Samuel and his bandmates wore various items of clothing that my parents had made for a very special performance that they gave at the end of a long day of celebration. And I wore an assemblage of clothing, some of which I used to wear, and some of those things I didn't fit in. So I was letting things out and borrowing clothes from my mom to create an outfit that I could wear to do a bit of a spinning demonstration. It was a lot of fun and a great chance to reflect on history and the pride and joy that comes with making your own things, especially your own garments, because I think there's nothing as intimate or as powerful as that ability to make something for yourself that you can wear. I was very pleased that at this event, a podcast listener, Amy, and her family came for a visit, and they stayed most of the day, which was really lovely, and it was such a great chance to meet Amy, her husband John, and their daughter Svea. And they took an interest in everything that was going on. We had a great chat, and it was a lot of fun. Hearing the stories of others' journeys of making is really fascinating to me. And in terms of slow fashion, in addition to attending Rhinebeck this month, I also have two other slow fashion related events coming up. I'll be attending a talk at FIT in New York City, and also Betson Corkill will be appearing at the Fibercraft Studio, or rather the larger Waldorf campus in Chestnut Ridge, New York, and I plan to attend that event as well. I will put links to this information in the show notes for this episode in case you have an interest in finding out more. And as I mentioned, I will be attending Rhinebeck for the entire weekend. I'll be there on Saturday and Sunday. First and foremost, I will be engaging in a joint fleece purchase with the other podcasters from the Fleecewise series. Fleecewise has begun. Have you been listening? Have you been watching? Claire of New Hampshire Knits put out her episode, and so did Sarah of Fibertrek. Emily will be dropping an episode this week, and next week I will wrap up part one of this series. My topic has to do with what happens to the fleece once you take it home. So we've been going on a bit of a journey from the sheep in the field under the care of the shepherd, through what happens to get that fleece from the farm to a festival or other point of sale. And Emily's going to talk about quite a few different things, but one thing she will address is how to negotiate the fleece barn or the fleece tent at a festival, some pointers for what you should be looking for. And then I pick up from there. So now you've purchased a fleece. Now what? And there haven't been too many questions or points posted in the Yarns at Yin Hu Ravelry thread. So if there is something that you want to know related to that topic, I hope you will make a post about it so that I can plan to answer your question on the episode next week. Ever-expanding skill set. September has been the month of mushrooms, and a few weeks ago I attended Fungus Fest at the Frelinghuysen Arboretum in Morris County, New Jersey. I only had a very, very little amount of time that I could devote to this festival, but I wanted to stop in because I wanted to know more about mushrooms, and a local expert on mushrooms, Jim Barg, was leading a bit of a mushroom walk, a foraging walk. In this case, it was a staged foraging walk because the grounds of the Arboretum are very highly controlled and it's not a good place to just go running around trying to find mushrooms. It was a very limited time for a walk and there were folks of all ages and all sizes attending. So it needed to be something that was friendly to everyone who wanted to participate. But I did learn a great deal going on this walk and finding out about different mushroom varieties in our area. And I joined the New Jersey Mycological Association so that I would have access to information about upcoming foraging walks where I could find out more. And I made a purchase of a shiitake log. It's not so much a log as a piece of wood. It's a brick of compressed sawdust that's been inoculated so that shiitake mushrooms start growing on it if you missed it 3 times a day. So I've been faithfully doing that. I purchased this log on Sunday, and by Friday, I was harvesting shiitake mushrooms, or rather, Samuel was harvesting them, because he's been helping me with the care of these mushrooms and the preparations. So we've made just a very simple pasta with mushrooms, and then this weekend I made a mushroom risotto, which was so amazing and delicious. And I've also developed a recipe. It's more of a recipe idea than a strict recipe, but it's a set of instructions that I've listed as a blog post on my website for making a mushroom bread pudding. It's really delicious. It's very filling and satisfying, kind of comfort food, and really great for holiday meals, especially if you have some folks who don't eat meat but want something super rich and satisfying. This could be served as a side, but it could also be a nice main course. It makes a nice presentation as well. So I've linked to that in the discussion on mushrooms. And it was a really great day. I wish I had more time in my schedule to visit Fungus Fest, because there were cooking demonstrations, there were growing demonstrations, and there was this wonderful woman there named Ursula. And Ursula does dyeing of yarn and fiber with different varieties of mushrooms. I took a photograph of her because she's so adorable with her booth, and she had a display of this very, very wide array of colors that she was able to achieve from mushrooms. And she did tell me that she uses iron, tin, I think chrome or copper. She uses some different kinds of vessels, and post-mortem baths in order to change the color in some cases, but it was really a rainbow of color that she had achieved. And so sometime I would love to take a class to glean some of Ursula's knowledge. So it, all in all, it was a great day and a fun time. I certainly plan on putting this on my calendar for next year. And hopefully between now and then, I'll have the opportunity to go on one of these foraging hikes. During the month of October, apples are the featured ingredient for hashtag Power Pantry. I thought that was a nice seasonal choice, and I am interested in doing some unusual things with apples, things that I haven't tried yet. Someone on the thread has already mentioned treating a very, very tart green apple like a mango, like a green mango, and making it into a curried soup with coconut milk, which sounds so fabulous. I definitely want to try out something like that. And I've also been thinking about savory dishes. I really enjoy apples with onions and pork. I think that's a very typical autumn dish in my family. So I'll be thinking about different flavors that I could add to that kind of a savory dish. And of course, there are apple pies. I like to make an apple pie with a variety of different kinds of apples. So I look forward to visiting my local farmer's market to pick out a variety of apples, some that cook up very quickly and some that maintain their firmness and their tartness. I think using a variety is the way to go. I confess, though, that most of my apple baking is not in the form of a pie. I have kind of a standard recipe that I make year-round. In the summer, I make it with peaches, and sometimes I'll throw a few blueberries in if I have them. And in the fall and winter, and even into the spring, I'll make this same dish with apples, whatever apples I have on hand. I make it in a small La Crusette shallow baking dish so that it's enough for about 4 servings. And I peel the apples, cut them, and then I just toss them right in the dish. Sometimes I butter the dish if I'm feeling fancy, but usually I don't. I just toss them in the dish with a little bit of granulated sugar, a little bit of flour, and a little bit of cinnamon and nutmeg. And then in a separate bowl, I put, I don't even really measure these things, I would say about 1/3 cup each of brown sugar, flour, oats, and butter. And I cut the butter into these other ingredients. Sometimes I add a few tablespoons of flaked coconut, or if I have some chopped or ground nuts, I might add those in. And I just work it in with my pastry cutter until I have a coarse mixture. I put that on top of the apples, bake in a 350 oven until it's bubbling all around the sides and just a little bit of bubbling in the middle. It's excellent warm. It's excellent with vanilla ice cream. It's great as leftovers or for lunch with yogurt the next day. And it's really quick and easy, where I would hesitate to make a pie on a weeknight. This is something I can throw together while I'm cooking dinner. There will certainly be more discussion about apples in upcoming episodes this month, but one thing I wanted to mention in this segment is that if you have a pick-your-own apple orchard in your area, you might consider asking the farmer whether or not he allows or she allows gleaning in the orchard, or to see if there's a local gleaning organization that operates in the orchard. I just participated in such a gleaning operation with some students from the high school where I work. They have gardens on our high school campus, and the sole purpose for their gardening is to provide fresh produce for our local food pantry. And they've also started gleaning. So they work with organizations or particular farmers, and they find out when and where gleaning is allowed, and then they go and glean vegetables. In this case, it was apples, and then box them up and take them to the local food pantry. This is mutually beneficial because farmers of these grow your own orchards will tell you that folks out in the orchard pick one apple and 3 fall to the ground. And most often people see those are as bruised or damaged, and they won't pick them up and put them in the basket for purchase. But some of them they only have really minor flaws. If the skin of the apple isn't broken, if it's not punctured, if it's not darkened or bruised, then it's a great apple and it could really go to use before it starts going bad. The longer it sits on the ground, the more potential there is for that apple to start going bad. So we were given bushel baskets and we were told where in the apple orchard to go. This is hands and knees work. You're picking up each individual apple and you're looking for clean, unblemished ones to put in your basket, and they could really do some good at your local food pantry. On the porch, there are 2 projects on my needles currently. One is the Collie Wobbles Socks, a pattern by Emily Estrada. This pattern was a gift, and I'm knitting it in beautiful autumnal colors of greens and golden yellows and deep wine reds that was dyed by Ginny of Fat Cat Knits. I'm working on US size 0 double points, loving the blackthorn needles, and I've found out that my talking about them on the podcast has encouraged a few of you to go out and make a purchase. I really enjoy these blackthorn needles. And I was also knitting on a set of Dreams needles. They're beautiful turquoise dyed wood. I think every size is dyed in a different color, but two of them have snapped like toothpicks, and so I can no longer use that set of three. So I've put that sock on some Knitter's Pride Carbons needles so that I can knit these two socks in tandem. And I'm having a great time with the knitting. It's just interesting enough that I have to stay focused. But most of the difficulty is just in about 21 stitches of the sock, and then the rest of the sock is knit in stockinette, and the yarn is knitting up beautifully. It's a nice seasonal pair of socks that's always with me in my bag. The other project is my Rhinebeck project. I have elected to knit an entire dress. I think I began this dress just at the very end of August. The dress is called the Bressy dress. I recently watched an episode of Shetlands where this island, Bressay, is mentioned. And Inspector Jimmy Perez says Bressy. It almost sounds like it ends with an IE the way he says it. So I still search for the authentic pronunciation of this dress. It is a tunic type of dress with a colorwork yoke, some additional colorwork at the hem of the dress, cap sleeves, and gorgeous patch pockets. I'm knitting it in mostly black, so it's been black stockinette in the round for days and days. But as of this podcast recording, I have completed all the color work at the hem of the dress. I've done the ribbing at the bottom, bound off, and I have completed both of the sleeves. So the dress is complete, and what's left are the pockets. And they will be challenging because they are knit flat, but there is color work. So I'm going to have to figure out how to manipulate two colors of yarn while purling, and I have not done that. They're also stitched on the front of the dress, and it seems to me that it looks really cute if you do it well, and it looks like a disaster if they're crooked. And the dress is black, with there aren't a lot of guidelines visually for where these should go. So I think that will be a challenge, and I'm pleased that I have nearly 2 weeks to address that part of this garment. Some changes that I made to the pattern as I knit are that I did extend the length of the dress just a bit beyond what was suggested by the pattern, so that I have a more realistic dress length and less of a tunic length. I did use a tubular bind off for both the sleeve ribbing and the ribbing at the hem of the dress. The best way that I have found to do this is to complete the 2x2 rib as written. So I think it was 4 rounds. So I did all 4 rounds in 2x2 rib. And then I knit another round in which I converted the 2x2 rib to 1x1 rib. And then I use a tubular sewn bind off to bind everything off. In the case of the hem of the dress, I did this in 3 sections. So it was way too much yarn to anticipate how much I would need and then use a needle and thread for that entire sewn bind off. Since this is 100% wool and I can just spit join that together, I just broke off a reasonable length of yarn and I worked until I just had a few inches left. I felted a new piece on, and I, all in all, I needed, I think, 3 different lengths of yarn until I had completed that bind off. So that was a good technique, and I think it saved me a lot of time to do it in pieces that way. And then for the sleeves, one thing I was concerned about with Goodwin Johnson's pattern is that the sleeves looked fluttery, and I did not want fluttery, flappy sleeves. All I did was avoid the increase that's suggested after you pick up stitches for the sleeve, and that was the only change I made. I picked up everything as suggested. I think under the right arm, I needed to pick up a few extra stitches, and then I just quickly decreased down to the 72 stitches that were recommended. But then on the left sleeve, it seemed to be fine, and I picked up exactly the right amount. And then I used that same technique, a 2x2 rib for 4 rounds, convert to a 1x1 rib, and then do the sewn tubular bind off, which I have nearly committed to memory. I did forget how to start it the very first time, and I watched the Very Pink Knits tutorial briefly, but after that, I had it down just fine and I didn't need to keep rechecking or rewatching a video. The dress fits well. If anything, I think it could be a little bit smaller, but I am extremely pleased that it isn't too tight. I like the length. I have quite broad shoulders, so that yoke sits nicely on the shoulders. And so far, I have steam blocked the dress. I'm not sure about fully soaking that dress before I wear it for the first time. I just anticipate that there's a possibility it could stretch, and right now it's pretty good. And steam blocking with an iron, I turn the garment inside out, I hold the iron just above the knitting, and everything kind of relaxes and straightens out, and the dress looks really good. So I may just leave it as is, work on the pockets, and then I'll work on blocking it maybe after I wear it for the first time. So right now, the focus will be on the pockets and getting the dress together before Rhinebeck. The two patterns I mentioned this episode are the Collie Wobbles Socks by Emily Estrada and the Bressé Dress by Goodwin Johnson that appears in a book called Fair Isle Style by Mary Jane Mucklestone. Since I've been working on this long-term project of a dress, which may be the most knitting I've put into a single item since I began knitting, I've had a lot of time to think about what I'm going to work on in the future. I mentioned a few episodes back that I was really fascinated by the Journey cowl that's featured in the most recent issue of Taproot. And so I am committed to that project. It will be a New Year's cast on for me, and I thought it would be a great opportunity to host a craft along. Sometimes I miss out on knit-alongs or craft-alongs because they come up so quickly and I'm already engaged in knitting other projects. So I thought I would take the risk of maybe being too forward-thinking, but announce this idea for a craft-along anyway, which is a Taproot craft-along. During the months of January and February, I will be hosting a Taproot craft along for anything from the hands section of Taproot magazine. I've only been a subscriber for a year, but I think there are many other listeners who have been subscribing for a while, or maybe other new subscribers just like me, or maybe you just get your hands on one issue and try something. There is typically some kind of knitting or crochet pattern in each issue, but the hand section has all kinds of other things to make. They could be toys, there are recipes in there, lots of things that you could try. So I thought for the new year, for January and February, that would be the perfect opportunity to try your hand at something new. If this interests you, keep it in mind and start gathering your materials. I have gathered together some really beautiful colors of fingering weight yarn for the Journey Cowl, and then I ordered a skein of Cornish Tin 2 in an undyed oatmeal gray color for the background or the main color of this cowl. And when I got it, I made a little sample of all of the colors, like a little color card. And that Cornish tin just works beautifully with the other colors that I pulled from my stash. So it's making me very excited to start working on this cowl in the new year. And until then, I could work on maybe adding another color or two to my palette. I will start a thread for this knit along on the Yarns at Yin Hu group. So if you'd like to start sharing your planning and ideas, you can start doing that right away.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sweet nature, sweet nature thing. It's a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, recorded by Bovine Social Club. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Sweet nature, sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. Thank you. you deserve is gonna get you high. You better tell your face a smile. Jump in a river naked and hike a country mile and say, sweet nature, sweet nature, babe.